Welcome to Creating Connection with me, your host, Dr. T, where we will navigate being human together. We'll do this through conversations, exploring the challenges and joys of life, uncovering insights and strategies to create meaningful connections, to foster personal growth and find solace in the collective wisdom of our diverse community. Drawing from a unique blend of academic expertise and personal experiences, I will dive into the joys and complexities of aging, death, dying, grief, and body image. With a blend of humor and compassion and understanding, we will forge connections that transcend geographical boundaries and unite us in our shared humanity. When we come together, the possibilities are endless. Creating Connection with me, Dr. T, starts now. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. T, and you're listening to Creating Connection on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with me for the next hour as my special guest and I apply mindfulness to communication. Heather, welcome. I am so excited to introduce my friend and teaching partner, Heather Haslam. Since 2007, Heather's been living her purpose to support people to age well across their lifespan. This has taken her career in several different directions. She's been a wellness director at the Sanford Center for Aging, which is where I met her, director of the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and most recently, she hosts a podcast and writes a blog for the Center for Application Substance Abuse Technologies at the University of Nevada, Reno. In addition, she's a coach mentor for the Chopra Certification Program and has a private coaching practice. Her full bio is on the episode page. So Heather and I did our mindfulness training together. As I said, I met her at the Sanford Center for Aging, and we were teaching Gerald classes together. So she was I don't know what your title was. But then we started doing mindfulness together because I was not handling grad school well together. So you kind of set the path and then we just did the training together. We have taught together. We've led a retreat at Tahoe and hope to do more. We've led workshops and then co-created and facilitated corporate and health professional trainings together. Welcome. Thank you for being here, Heather. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Yay. Is there anything you'd like to add to the bio before I ask my first question?
I think that covers it.
Okay, great. So I would love for you to share a little bit about your path. How did you come into meditation mindfulness and maybe even a titch about how it's impacted your life?
Sure. So I first became aware of mindfulness-based stress reduction when I was working on my master's, and I was looking at ways to reduce stress for older adults. And I kept coming across the literature on mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR, and I was fascinated by it. And I was like pulled to it and always had this felt sense like, I really want to do that someday. I want to teach it. And I didn't know why. So Okay. Fast forward, probably almost a decade, I don't know, a while. And I had my son and I was a new mom and I was struggling being a new mom. And so I definitely had some postpartum depression and really kind of felt like I'd lost a sense of myself. And mindfulness, I took my first MBSR class, which is an 8-week class. And I finally felt like I got back to myself, which was huge, right? So it helped me show up in a different way as a mom, as a wife, as a person who works in the community. And then I just kept moving down the path. I still like was like, oh, yes, I do really want to teach this. And so I am a teacher at heart. And so continue down the training path. And now mindfulness is foundational for really all of the work that I do.
I love that. And I think you're bringing up something so important that although, I mean, I don't have children myself, but I've been able to witness so many of my friends who have had kids and how even though it's like joyful, but it's also can be confronting because all of a sudden you have this new person and who are you within this relationship? So I love that mindfulness helped bring you back to you. like back to mm-hmm. who you are, and probably also has expanded that. And let's see, was there anything else I wanted to know about that? What would you like to say? So in teaching is at your heart, meditation, mindfulness. I always say all roads lead back to meditation and mindfulness for me as well. And no more so than in communication. Mm-hmm. how when I think about like us together and like how that is just become like such a strong through line, for me, it's in our support of each other and our communication challenges, because what we'll be talking about today, the title is Mindful Communication, Simple, Not Easy. And so mm-hmm. can you say a little bit about when you think mindful communication, what comes up for you?
Yeah, a few things come up. The first thing that comes to mind is open-hearted presence, being with someone fully. So often, if you're having a conversation with someone, you know, that person might be physically present, but you can tell they've mentally gone somewhere else. And so yes. Mindful communication in and of itself requires the person to be present. And I think in order to actually have mindful communication, it does require a person to have an open heart in some way. Mm. And that is simple and not easy for sure. We get triggered, we get activated by the people in our lives, something someone says. And so to acknowledge how that's impacting us, and then to keep coming back and showing up, which can be a challenge.
It can be scary, right? Like, I know, and we'll get into stories as we kind of go through the talking points, because I want to make sure that when we're talking about mindful communication, people are getting a sense of, you know, what do we mean by it, you know, and how can it be implemented in your life? But I do like normalizing that, you know, although it's, you know, this kind of ideal, and it's a real gift that we give to each other when we can be fully present. And I know that, you know, phones are a big detractor. And you know, I have someone in my life who I love very much, and his name is Charlie, and he will be on his phone, and I'll be like, babe, I'm talking to you. And he's like, yeah, I'm right here. I can hear you. And he can hear me. But I don't have that sense of presence, which I think is so beautiful, and the undefended heart.
And I think there's, the mindful communication piece is it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And so the person on the other end, in order to have mindful communication, needs to feel seen and mm-hmm. heard, mm-hmm. and valued as a human being. And that piece, that's like varsity level.
It really is. And as we go through this episode today, I really want people to understand that we're pointing at like a lifelong practice. You know, there are moments that I've had that I've like, and I'll call you and I'll be like, I did it. Okay. This felt like non-judgmental and open and just really flowing. And then, you know, in the next hour or in the next day, I'm like, ah, you know, and kind of taken. And so it's not about being perfect at all. And so none of this is about being perfect. So getting into it, I'm just going to define, mindful communication. So mindful communication is a skill that utilizes mindfulness, which if you'll remember from episode 2, mindfulness is paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. Hard enough to do for our own experiences. And then, as you said, varsity level, when we're talking about applying this in community or in relationship. And so this is applying mindfulness when speaking and listening, which can help a person to develop the ability to listen with empathy, self-awareness, strengthens social connections, and improves focus and attention. And so as I say that definition to you, what comes up? What do you think when you hear that?
I think it acknowledges our humanity. Mm. It in the kind of, we have a need to, we're wired for connection. Mm. And so we need to be with others to survive. I mean, even if you just look at babies who aren't held, you know, they get ill and very sick. And so we see this across the lifespan that we need connection. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes understanding ourselves is difficult. There's a lot of conditioning. There's a lot going on up in our mind. There's a lot going on in our hearts, within our emotions. And being able to show up in this way is a gift. And like you said, a lifetime practice.
Yeah. And I think that idea of that ability to be aware of what's going on. And that's where like a formal meditation practice helps, because you start to see kind of the contents of your mind. You start to see like how you flow and what's happening versus just that knee jerk reaction of like, oh, someone said something and I'm going to respond in this way. I have a quote here from Oren J. Sofer from his book, Say What You Mean. Love this book. And I did include in the episode description three books that I recommend on communication. But this quote is, human communication is more than just a linguistic exchange. It's a multidimensional, embodied, lived experience that involves all of our being. Feelings, thoughts, memories, and history. It is at once verbal, mental, emotional, and somatic. Communication includes how we use our voice, the tone, volume, and pace at which we speak. It includes body language and touch. And I love this because it is so inclusive, and we can often, you know, as I had said, you know, kind of jokingly about Charlie, like looking at his phone and I can hear you, but in those moments, what I'm actually wanting is more. I'm wanting that eye contact. I'm wanting, you know, to feel his presence. And when we have communication or conversations like that, it's so like, I can feel the difference. And I think most people can feel the difference even on the telephone. If someone's distracted or doing something else, it's like there's so many layers that are coming into it that we might not be aware of, but we can pick up and sense.
Mm-hmm. It's that felt experience. And if you don't feel like the other person cares in some respect, or and it's not about like in the example of Charlie, right? Like, he clearly cares deeply about you. Yeah. Not that he doesn't care, it's he's distracted, right? So there's right. Like, but there's this sense of like, well, why even bother if someone, you don't feel someone's felt presence, it can be just like, okay, I'm shutting down now.
right. Yeah. And like that shut down feeling, which then prohibits then that feeling of presence because of what you were talking about, not only with, you know, the idea of like that heartfelt being there, but that can be vulnerable and scary. And if you're not feeling kind of met out on that little ledge, it can be like, no, I'm not going to go out there if I'm just going to be by myself. However, you can shift conversations with your own, you know, kind of process. There's, and I don't remember it now. Do you remember what I'm thinking about? It is the dance changes if one person changes it. So like if you are all are doing a waltz and someone starts doing a jitterbug, I don't know, is that a dance? That's a dance. Then the dance inherently changes. So you can bring this mindful awareness and attention. So I can feel like even if Charlie is distracted, I can then acknowledge in myself like, oh, maybe I want attention in a way that he can't give right now. So maybe I will pause and not say the thing that I want to say. So then that's checking in with yourself. And I think that that's a big piece of that. How do you do this in your life?
So I'm thinking of my son, and he'll be talking to me, and I'll be in the middle of doing something like responding to an email or a text or doing, you know, it's usually related to work, and he's just chatting, and I was like, and I can feel the pull because I want to give him my presence and I want to finish this. So I'll say, hey, buddy, like, I do want to listen to you and I want to hear about what you're saying, but I need 2 minutes and then I can give you my full attention.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
Hopefully I don't get distracted and like forget to keep in my attention. That's the part that, you know, sometimes if I got down some rabbit hole. But it's that awareness, right? And the taking the responsibility for my piece of the communication. I can't give that to you right now.
Which is also valid, right? Because again, you know, we're talking about something that is a practice, and at some points you might just, that practice might be, oh, I can't give my full presence and attention. So, you know, when can I do that? Or if you can see someone else is not able to, you know, maybe you choose a different time or, you know, say, oh, I'd rather talk about this later. And I think that's positive.
And I also think, you know, something that comes to mind and how do I use this in my own life is something that we learned in a class together with Aya, which was on nonviolent communication. But in that class, she talked about like basically containers of safety. And so, you know, there's some people like you know, that like you are in my safety zone. And so I'm able to call you and share things and talk through things and process things that I don't do with other people who might be, you know, in a different container. And then there's people who are unsafe. And so I'm not going to divulge or share things to them in a way like someone I feel safe with. So there's a safety piece to this as well, that psychological safety of, are my needs going to be basically heard and met with this presence and kindness and compassion? And if not, I may not open that up, right? So I might not open, which I guess comes back to the open-heartedness. Like, I don't want to open up in this way because I don't feel safe. So for me, that's a big piece.
That makes sense. And what comes up for me with that is the idea that I think it's, I know it's Brene Brown, but I don't know the exact words, but something, she says something like, not everyone has the right to our story. And so I think that that is a really important thing to know, because we're not definitely, you know, saying to just go out into the world and say, you know, everything that's on your heart, you know, because that's what's there. But it is that wise, or the discernment of, you know, where can this be held? Is it, well, and then here's my, I don't know if anyone can see my tattoo, but it says thankful, but in the dark letters, or the purple letters, actually, it is the reminder for gates of speech. And so, is it true and timely? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And is it useful? So that comes into the play too, because it might be true, but is it necessary? Is it kind? You know, you don't need to say absolutely everything off of the top of mind. And it is a real gift to start to be aware of who those people are in that inner circle. And if you, you know, if for the people who are listening, if you don't have that, you know, it's something worth paying attention to, because that is the piece that we talked about in episode one about connection and the importance of being able to be seen and known for who you are. And so, you know,
And that makes me think of, you have to first know and see yourself. Mm-hmm. So I come from a long line of people pleasers and lovely human beings, but don't actually communicate their own feelings and needs. They just adapt. And it's something that I have worked on for the last several years and continue to work on. But in that same workshop that I just referenced, I remember doing a journaling exercise with myself, and I had gone through a particularly challenging communication with my husband. And I started like journaling what I was feeling and what my needs were. And then I realized, oh, those are not my feelings. Those are his feelings. Oh, and so then I had to like learn how to separate myself, so that, because I do tend to be fairly empathetic as well. And so I react to the energy, the emotions, and the environment, and I tend to take them on. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to learn how to, and I'm still learning how to not take those on and to be like, okay, what am I feeling right now? Mm-hmm. What are my needs in this situation? And then learning how to articulate that. Ooh. Again, varsity, and I'm probably like maybe JV or like whatever's below JV.
I love that you're going down a sport. Well, you know more about sports than I do. I was going to try and jump in. I'm like, I don't know. I would just pretend to know what a sports is. those are really good points. So with that, I want to bring up, because we're kind of talking around it, but I want to be direct as we're talking about the elements of mindful communication. So we've said it a couple of times, but self-awareness and self-awareness is really how we can then communicate well, because you are then aware of your thoughts, emotions, biases, judgments, distractions, and stress. And so a lot of the stories that we've been talking about or kind of talking around are talking about, like, are we distracted? Are we stressed? And what kind of judgments are we bringing to the conversation that can get in the way of actually being open and kind of that undefended heart? Do you want to take the next one?
Sure. Well, I'd just like to add to that or highlight, really going back to what you had shared about Orrin J. Sofer's definition. He also includes somatics, which is the body. And so our body is full of wisdom and is continually communicating with us. And so, you know, if we start to get a pit in our throat or a pit in our stomach, or, you know, for me, like your shoulders start to like clench over. These are all indications, right, that there is some sort of impact. So we can start to lean in and pay attention to our body and how we're even reacting or responding in situations. So I think I would add the body to self-awareness as well.
Yes. Thank you. I feel like I should just add that right now. No, but the body is very important. And we have to get into the habit of checking in, right? Because so often we're living in this, you know, kind of cognitive space where it's the thoughts and judgments and reactions, and that dropping down and getting to know, like, what are those sensations and what do they mean, right? You know, is it like, ooh, you know, the body saying, pause, this isn't a safe situation. Or maybe it's that kind of, you know, heart racing where it's like, oh, this needs to be said. And even if it's scary. And so I love that that's such a key and important piece. And the next piece about speaking authentically.
So authenticity is the connection between what you are saying, how you are saying it, and what you believe. An authentic communication means listening more often than you speak. And when listening, focusing on the speaker and his or her message content rather than thinking about how to respond. So it's really about giving pause. So there's, you know, there's a couple things in there. With authenticity, we have to own and acknowledge our own experience, right? That's that articulation of our feelings and our needs. And it's giving that space so that when we're listening, we're not just like jumping into the next thing or thinking about, you know, whatever else we're going to say. But it's really deeply listening to that other person who's sharing.
Yeah. Which is the norm, right? Like when, you know, and I'll ask people, you know, to pay attention when they're talking, like what, you know, to start noticing, when are they wanting to jump in and waiting for their turn? You know, and I almost picture it like jump rope or that double dutch, you know, and you would like, when do you jump in? And conversations can really feel that way, and versus having that power of the pause. The third one is reflective listening. And this makes me laugh because one of my first friendships in grad school, I did some reflective listening and she was like, did you just therapize me? And I wasn't intending to, but reflective listening requires presence, focus, and attention. And with the practice of reflective listening, you listen to understand what the other person's saying. So again, going back to the Orin J. Sofer quote, you know, there could be like some tone, there could be some things coming at you. So the skill of trying to listen to understand what the other person's saying, not just reacting to what exactly they're saying. And then after the person is done speaking, reflect back to them what you heard them say. And that can sound like things like, oh, what I think I heard you say was, and I think what I actually said to Annie, and if you're listening, shout out Annie, it was something on that order. Like she said something, I'm like, oh, what I hear you saying is... We were at Starbucks and it just really opened the door to that friendship that I'm so grateful for. But it can feel awkward again, because if you're not bringing that number two, which is what you talked about, authenticity, you know, it can feel a little stilted, right? And especially if you're getting used to reflective listening, if you haven't been doing that, it's a skill and it can feel awkward. And it can actually sound awkward too.
It can definitely sound awkward, especially like as you mentioned, I mentor new coaches, and when someone's learning this skill of reflective listening, it can feel inauthentic and like mm-hmm. someone's just parroting back what you heard the other person say. So when you're like intentionally practicing it, it can feel inauthentic. And then when you do it, like it can be magical. So I think of reflective listening as this beautiful mirror that you've heard some sort of piece of wisdom, or there's something highlighted or something that you're curious about in what this other person has shared. And you're simply mirroring that back. And so that is a helpful piece. It doesn't have to be like, what I heard you say is X, Y, and Z, right? That's when it's not as authentic and can really, like, they're like, excuse me, what's wrong with you? And I've totally done that to people. And they're just like, full disclosure, I practiced it with my husband, but like intentionally practiced it. And he's like,
yeah.
What are you doing?
Like, what are you doing? Yeah. And so I think that's when you bring in, that idea. And, you know, the number four is attitudes of mindful communication. And on episode two, I talked about attitudes of mindfulness. And this is a similar list, but, you know, at top is what you had just pointed to, like curiosity and non-judgment. And even if you're doing it, you know, authentically, you know, maybe it does land weird to someone if they're not used to being like heard or having that presence, right? Like that can be a little startling when you're used to kind of a, you know, a more distracted interaction. And do you want to talk about the other attitudes? I jumped in with curiosity.
Sure. And beginner's mind. So beginner's mind is really helpful for those people in your life who are really sticky. So they're annoying to you, they activate you in some way. And what we can do in mindful communication is practice meeting this person where they're at in this moment without all of the baggage that we're carrying with us about our previous experiences. And it kind of circles back to the curiosity. It's like, okay, so I've never had this interaction with this person. Let's bring this beginner's mind, some curiosity, some non-judgment, and that leads us to acceptance. So how can I accept this person as they are, or meet them in the moment as they are? And then we also have compassion. So how can we bring kindness and care for this other human who we're talking with? Empathy. And I love empathy because it's really, you know, I think it sometimes gets confused with like, I have to have gone through an experience like this person. Mm-hmm. And really what empathy points to is that all humans have emotions and we all have the same emotions, right? At differing times, of course. So we know what those emotions are. So empathy means that we can acknowledge and have empathy for what that person is feeling. We may not understand what they've gone through, but we can understand what they're feeling in that moment. So that, I think that's how I tend to think about empathy.
Oh, I do love that, because I think that that's so important, because sometimes, you know, we can speak and we want to like so deeply relate that it's like, oh, you shared a loss, so I'm going to share a loss. But versus just going like, oh, I understand that this person is grieving, and I too know what grieving is. I don't have to jump in with a story, but I can bring that sense of empathy and care, compassion to their own experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then the last two are vulnerability. And vulnerability means that we are open to the experience and sharing, I guess.
Yeah.
Which goes back to that safety piece, I guess.
Trust.
Trust. Oof, trust, safety. And then our last one is patience. Sometimes people aren't able to meet us where we would like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
So can we be patient with them? Can we be patient with ourselves? So patience is a big one.
Patience, what comes up to mind, and I can't remember the exact amount of time, but for people who might be supporting someone who's living with dementia, or maybe someone might be living with dementia, that piece of patience, or even introverts. I mean, you and I have both taught in the college classrooms many, many years. And so our world is really set up for, you know, kind of that outgoing, you know, quick responder. And introverts, there's a great book called Quiet that talks about how life is really not set up for introverts. And so actually pausing and having that patience for, you know, whether someone's struggling or living with some cognitive challenges, or maybe they just need more processing time because that's just how they are, having patience to allow someone to have that. And I do have a very funny, I think it's funny. So Charlie is my husband. We were driving, and I have, you know, like I love road trips and I want to have good conversations. And so sometimes I'll like throw out different topics, like waiting to see what he's going to nibble on. And one time he said, well, you have to give me time to process. And I was like, oh, okay. And so we were in the car. I threw out, you know, a question or a conversation starter, and then I paused. And then I very patiently watched the clock. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. And he hadn't said anything. And so then I very gently said, babe, what are you thinking about what I said? And he's like, oh God, my mind is on 10 other different things. So I bring that up because, you know, it's not my natural inclination to be patient. And also, you know, I was trying to honor what he was saying. And then it was just a very funny miss.
Well, and it goes back to like you wanting to connect, right? Yeah. At a time when he's processing or thinking about whatever these 10 other things are, which is when we have those wonderful miscommunication mishaps in our relationship.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Or I used to, I probably still sometimes do this, but like as soon as my husband would get home, I would just want to like tell him all the things. And like on top of my mind was always the things that needed to get done or the logistics of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't timely generally when someone walks in the door. It could feel a little overwhelming. So I definitely try to have some patience and like hold those things for a more timely time.
Yes. But,
it sometimes happens, and sometimes I make mistakes or missteps and get too excited,
or you don't want to forget because you've forgotten like five times before that one time that you're blurting it out.
Right.
And then in just to really bring this home about like beginner's mind and curiosity. In our relationships, I like that term sticky about like who are challenging people, but we can also get into that with our people that we see all the time. our partners, you know, maybe colleagues, coworkers, and you're like, oh, this is just how it always is. And and there's that kind of internal eye roll. And then that's an immediate shutdown. And so you're not bringing that sense of curiosity to this moment and going like, this is really the first time, which then brings us to what gets in the way of mindful listening. And there are actually 12 common listening blocks. And what I And, you know, when we teach this, we actually have people kind of circle and think about which ones are most common for them. Not that we can't get into all of these 12 all at once, but you want to kick us off with listening blocks and see where this takes us, because they're good ones.
Sure. So these listening blocks, it's really helpful to start to pay attention to when, in what situations do I do these, right? So building that self-awareness. So when we're sharing these listening blocks, it's really a tool for self-awareness, because it's like, oh, in this situation, I find myself doing X, Y, Z. And then with that awareness, you can intentionally continue to do it, or you can take a different pathway. Yeah. And so the first one is mind reading, which is making assumptions about what the other person is going to say. We've talked a bit about our husbands on today, and this is where I find that I most do that, right? Like if my husband looks mad, I think he's mad at me. I'm like, oh, he's mad at me for something, when he might just be A, not mad, or you know, mad at something else, who knows? But until he's communicated that with me, like, I'm making an assumption, I'm mind reading about what he's feeling, or thinking that I know what he's going to say. And that's in those relationships where we see people a lot and it's like, oh, here we go. I know what they're going to say. Right.
So yes. That's
what you bring in the beginner's mind.
Yeah. And so, yeah, mind read. I used to think I was great at mind reading, because again, I think that goes with the like people pleasing, right? Because you want empathetic and kind of being able to read energy when you walk into a room and like, oh, something is amiss. And I think I know what that is. And it's probably about me, and it may or may not be about you, which is like the surprising thing as I've brought more of this practice into my life. Like, well, maybe it is about me, but if they haven't expressed that, well, you know, okay, or maybe it's not about me, which, I mean, not about me? I mean, come on. but mind reading is tough, and we really can't do that. So bringing in that idea of curiosity in beginner's mind.
And our next one is rehearsing. So that's preparing how you're going to respond before the other person is done talking. So we really get caught up in our own mind on like, okay, what am I going to ask next? What am I going to do with this? And then we haven't listened to probably more than half of what the other person has said, because we've just completely gone down another path and we've lost our presence.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I can do this when I'm building a case for why I'm right. And then it takes away that authenticity and in the moment, or even compassion for whatever the other person is experiencing. What
I said, or curiosity.
Or curiosity. Yeah, one of our favorite words. Filtering. What was filtering?
So that's selective attention for only certain types of information, and then allowing the mind drift away from the speaker. So this is, I think of like confirmation bias, when you're like, oh, I know what this person is going to say. And so you listen for those key points and you're like, yes, yeah, see, I knew it. So this is filtering, that selective attention, or you want to hear something specific. And so you're like listening for those pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which can be tricky. And you know, I think mindful communication on a whole, we're talking a lot about our personal relationships, but there is also this bigger conversation in the world and how we're showing up. And we can have people that we are in direct opposition ideologically. This could be within your own families. Maybe this is a timely conversation to be happening as we go into the holidays. And so, you know, bringing that curiosity to actually actually, you know, going like, okay, well, maybe if I, rather than just shutting someone down, I could be like, oh, I wonder why they think this, maybe even asking them to see if they know more than just a headline on this topic. So yeah, filtering is important.
Well, even on a more macro level, like in thinking about social media, right? Like there's filtering, and this is not a listening thing, but like there's filtering happening. Or even reading a news article, right? Like we're looking for specific pieces of information. And so it's interesting to see how in communication, in these other types of communication, like the news, we do the same thing.
Right.
We're looking to be able to confirm our own beliefs. And so we just keep seeking that information until we find it. And there's so much information out there that generally you can find it.
Yeah. And then the, you know, the algorithm, like, I mean, we can look at, you know, two different people and they're what they're being given, like the information that they're being given can be wildly different. And that is, yeah, filtering in real time in social media. I like that.
Yeah, and then that's fascinating.
It is.
And then judging. So holding on to judgment about what the other person is saying, which can lead to assessing that the other person isn't worth listening to.
Judging gets in the way. I mean, it gets in the way of our own knowing of ourselves. That's why it's in that, you know, definition of mindfulness, paying attention non-judgmentally. And so can we bring non-judgment to our communication? That can also feel very scary, right? Because if I'm not judging you, am I agreeing with you? No, but I can be curious and understand that you might be choosing something because you think it's the best for you or your family. And it might seem like, you know, really incongruent with what I think. Yeah.
Someone once described, rather than judging, can we use discernment? And so we can still discern and like listen and have our own experience. And that doesn't mean that we have to agree or like identify with their perspective, but we can still bring that kindness and compassion to that other person.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. I love that. Easier said than done. Simple, not easy. And then we'll go into the next. So we have daydreaming, which is it similar to filtering, do you think?
Yeah, it's really, I think when your mind has drifted away to a thought, a memory, or an image. So this is that example that we talked about earlier where you're physically present, but you've mentally drifted away, right? You're off in who knows where.
Yeah.
Right. Am I at a beach somewhere? Or like I say that, right? I'm like, ooh, I could go, like my mind could go there. So the person says something, it takes us somewhere and I start daydreaming about it. Or there's a lot happening, there's a lot going on in your mind. And so you're just like off in some other land.
Yeah. And then my advising, this is the next one here is one that I have had to work really, really hard on and to catch myself, right? Because someone might say something and then I'm like on to giving advice and they didn't ask for advice. And this can be really tricky because, you know, when we do bring empathy and care and compassion, it's like, oh, my friend is hurting or oh, this person's hurting. How can I help? But it really is, it does get in the way of like listening mindfully.
And I think it can also come across as judgment in some ways too. Like it could come across as like, you know, like if I give you advice, it's like, you don't know what to do or right. You don't know how best to support yourself. So I think it can come across that way too. Oh, and as teachers, right? Like we learn a lot. We have a lot that we get really excited and passionate about and we want to share. So it comes from this place of love and care and excitement. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not what's called for. I also see this a lot with healthcare providers, right? They're used to giving directive advice and it's hard not to.
Yeah, absolutely. Sparring. This is one that I don't do very often, but maybe you can say a little bit more about sparring and how that fits into listening blocks.
So being argumentative and believing that your opinion is the one that is correct.
Well, no, maybe I'm like, maybe I do this. Maybe I have a block to this listening block for myself. I'm like, oh, sparring. I'm not doing that. But then you just said that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that could be. Well,
and this comes back to, I think, of the body. So our nervous system, right? If we are in hyperarousal, which means our nervous system is on overdrive and we're in the fight response, it's likely we're just going to engage in sparring because that's our nervous system is revved up. So going back to the body, it's interesting how all of these things influence each other.
Yeah. And that really dovetails on the being right, or like thinking that you're right.
Yeah. It might look like being closed-minded and resisting or ignoring any communication that is different from your own perspective. So this, I mean, to me, this takes us back to where we are in the world, in politics, in, you know, religious beliefs, in, you know, fill in the blank of feeling like you are right and that other person is wrong or bad. Yeah. And then this is harmful. So harmful to communication, but also for violence in the world.
Yeah, it really is heartbreaking. And we can kind of see that in that dichotomous, like, you know, this way or that way, even in our own kind of government setting. So yes, that's a tough one. Okay, so then to go on to derailing and the next couple. Yeah.
So changing the subject or interrupting before the other person is done speaking. So the time that I have either noticed this in myself or seen it with other people is when we derail a conversation, it's oftentimes because we're uncomfortable with what the other person is saying. It's like, oh, no, this is a little too much for me. Let's go this direction. Or we have, you know, the person says something, it's triggered this other thought or idea or experience. And we're like, oh my gosh, let's go this direction. So it can happen. Usually I see either way. I'm sure there's other ways too.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I do that. Enthusiastic derailing and then to notice discomfort derailing. And then that can really lead to someone not being heard. A lot of my work is around grief and the experience of grief. And so when someone derails, you know, if someone is expressing grief, the pain point for the person who's grieving is not being heard, is not, you know, being able to fully express. And then also kind of with that derailing, then they're told, don't talk about this. And so thinking about that as we're, going into these seasons.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably one of the times that it's done most is when someone's. And it's because we don't know what to say, right? If we don't know what to say, that's that discomfort. And like, I don't know how to sit with it or communicate about it. So I'm going to go off onto this, which is more comfortable for me.
Absolutely.
Then we have placating. So that's agreeing too much and too quickly. So that might be like, I see, I understand. And it's sometimes actually done right in therapy in some ways, going back to therapy. But if it's overdone or done too much, it can really turn someone off for communication. And then comparing. So you are comparing yourself to other people and evaluating the differences. The amazing thing about all of these human beings on the planet, right? We're all different and there's no need for evaluating and comparison. And yet it's inherent in our society. So there's a lot to work through there as we learn to love and accept ourselves and then seek to understand the other person.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say like the quote that comes up and I don't know who said it, but comparison is the thief of joy. So whenever I think about that, you know, if I'm listening to someone talk about a great vacation and feeling like, oh, well, I haven't taken a vacation. And so that actually robs me of joy of like being in that kind of like shared, like, oh, I'm happy at your happiness. And also it's information for me. If I'm like, oh, I haven't had a vacation, you know, and maybe saying like, oh, this might be something I want to put on a more immediate note. So it's information back if you're doing that with self-awareness as well.
Mm-hmm. And even just there, right? Like I'm thinking about how like the communication between us, right? Like I didn't give space for you to come and share your, like this important piece of information. And so I love this because like, I'm aware of our amount of time we have.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, we got to get through 12 listening blocks. And then here I am interrupting communication. It's brilliant.
It is. It's so perfect.
All the time. It's like, oh, I don't have time for this. Like we got to keep moving.
Yes. And yeah. And like noticing, yeah, I think both of us, we're very, very aware of when we teach and talk about, you know, like doing, like being on purpose with our time. So yeah. So, but we are at the very last one. So identifying.
Perfect. So that's identifying. And when we're identifying, it's meaning that we've identified with what the other person says based on our own experience, right? So we're basically inserting ourselves in. It's like, oh, I know what that feels like. I've done that. And we jump in and it's a way that we connect. So I guess the other piece is like, none of these are inherently bad. Mm. It's that we have to be aware of how they might block our communication at times, right? Sometimes sharing your story with someone does build that trust and rapport, but it's like, as long as we don't take over and there's a reciprocity in it, then sharing, you know, what our own experiences can be useful.
Yeah, exactly. And done skillfully, it can be this this actual bridge to connection, right? But noticing if it's, you know, taking over. So again, that self-awareness piece. So on each episode, as we're coming to an end, action items, I like to leave people with action items, you know, so like what can folks do to start implementing mindful communication? I would say thinking about this list of like listening blocks, like noticing where you get caught. Do you have something, Heather, that you think that someone could do like today when they, or after they listen to this, what can they do to implement mindful communication?
I think the thing they could do today is when someone else is speaking, wait. Pause. Right? Take in what the other person has shared and then think about how you want to respond. And rather than getting up in your head and thinking about how do you want to respond the, you know, proper way, the right way, etc., it's like feeling what that other person has shared and then feeling into yourself and how do you want to respond from that open heart?
Ooh. Yeah. Okay. So Heather with the varsity level asked, you know, and one thing that we both do is we've talked about like actually bringing yourself into the present moment. So maybe if you're having a challenging conversation, find your feet, like feel where your feet are in the earth. I know you've said that you'll hold your hands sometimes underneath a table, like if you're in a meeting, and there's that coming back to the present moment and then getting curious about your reactions. I think that's super powerful. And before we end, Heather, like if people are interested in working with you, what's the best way to contact you?
So my website is just my name, heatherhaslam.com. And you can find my contact information there as well as all the various hats and things that I do in my life, in my career.
I love that. And I And I just love that you were here to talk about this important topic with me. I love teaching with you. I love talking with you. And I hope that you will come back on other episodes because it's just been so fun. And I'd like to remind folks, too, that they can join me every week for a free live guided meditation. It's on Zoom. Again, it's free. And it's on Mondays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific. And you can go to my website, ccwithdrt.com, to reserve your spot. And I do want to say thank you all so much for tuning in to Creating Connection with Dr. T. I'm so grateful that you choose to spend this time with us. And I had a fantastic time. I hope you did too. And I'd love you to join the first and third Wednesdays of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central, 10 a.m. Pacific. And until then, take good care of yourself and others. And I look forward to seeing you back here next time. Thanks again, Heather. Thank you for listening to Creating Connection with me, Dr. T. You can join me by tuning in on the first and third Wednesdays every month at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where we will navigate being human together. Being human means that we all have a body, and we will all experience loss, grief, and aging if we're lucky. Let's join together on this journey of exploration, support, and mutual learning. I love bringing people together, and on Creating Connection, we are a conversation away from understanding another person and, quite frankly, ourselves. For more information, visit ccwithdrt.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.